this led to my eventually becoming a spiritual teacher, right? I guess that's what you call me. In which I wanted to share my own subjective state and what I've discovered and things that have never been really said before. What I teach now I call devotional non-duality. Devotional. Devotional because one is in love with the truth. One is in love with the pathway to God through truth. In non-duality, meaning that to reach a state of enlightenment, one has to transcend the ego. And the ego is dualistic in nature. Human thinking is dualistic in nature. There's an either-or, a this or that. So the spiritual student is usually confronted, it starts first with confronting the ego and what has traditionally been called sin and given all kinds of bad names. So the first thing I want a student to understand is the nature of the ego and to become friendly with it. And where does the ego come from? So you have to get away from demonizing it. You can't see it as an enemy. The ego is nothing but the animal nature. When you look at the animal kingdom, all you see is what's called the human ego. When we see it in an animal, we just say it's animal nature. But when we see it in a human, we say, oh, isn't that awful? Well, no, it's not awful. The animal brain is still active in the back of the human brain. So when we became human, so when we evolved, when consciousness evolved over great eons of time, up through the animal world, you see, very primitive life form, you see, the beginning of that which is rapacious, it lives by the death of others, the reptilian world. Then you see the emergence of the mammalian. And for the first time, you see the emergence of love. Well, love doesn't emerge on this planet for millions and billions and millions of years. Not till you see the mammalian. Well, when you see the bird, you see the mother bird caring for the eggs and the baby birds. But it's really the mammalian that you begin to see. So you don't see love until you see really the emergence of the maternal. So love doesn't appear until you see the mother's concern for the child, the infant, the fledgling. The paternal love, the mother has to protect the cubs from the male lion, so you don't see it arising primarily early in the evolution of the animal world. And so you see the love beginning to emerge as the expression of the maternal. And then you begin to see love blossom over the ages. And, you know, romantic love, which we take for granted in today's world, is a rather recent occurrence. People didn't get married for romantic love. They got married because the family arranged it, or the kings and queens of England, for all their power, you know, weren't free to choose love. They figured marriage is one thing, love is another. So romantic love, as we see it, is a rather very recent and modern thing, you know. So anyway, when people go into spiritual work, they are always concerned about overcoming the ego. So first we say, recontextualize it as the residual of the animal within us. The old animal brain is still present in the back of the human brain. And the prefrontal cortex is a rather recent emergence. If you calibrate the level of consciousness of hominids as they evolved over time, you see Cro-Magnon, you see Neanderthal. Neanderthal calibrates around 75. Really an animal level. Although it's able to speak and talk, it's still pretty much an animal. So it's only with the emergence of the forebrain and the prefrontal cortex you begin to see ethics, morality, spiritual awareness as such. So what man then is trying to do is transcend domination by the animal instincts. If you take it out of the viewpoint of sin then, and begin to see it as animal. So what is an animal like? Well, you can see the human ego on display at any zoo. You go to the Monkey Island in the zoo, and you see territoriality. You see gangs. They hang together in groups and then fight over turf. So you see the turf wars, which is every day's headlines in the Middle East or wherever on the planet. There's always a turf war going on. And then you see the exploitation and the subjugation of the weak. You see deception and lying and camouflage. And so all you see in today's headlines is Monkey Island with a human expression. So spiritual work then is really overcoming selfishness, self-centeredness, and egocentricity in all of its various disguises. What are the various disguises? Well, the compulsion to have, to own, to be successful, to win, and all the things that we know as egocentricity. So how does one then begin to transcend that? People say, well, I'm interested in evolving spiritually. You know, what can I do from a practical viewpoint? Because all what you've just described can sound quite advanced and quite theoretical and quite imposing to somebody who's not familiar with the work. Actually, this work becomes rather easy. The more you read it, the more you arrive at the feeling that I knew this all along. And of course, you do know it all along. But how to transform this in everyday life? So people say, how can I grow spiritually? Do I have to go somewhere? Do I have to get a guru? Do I have to join a meditation group? Do I have to recite mantras or what? No, you don't have to do that at all. It's so simple that it's overlooked all the time. It's a decision to be loving and kind towards all of life, including your own, at all times, no matter what. To be forgiving, to be gentle, to be that which is supportive of life. So that becomes not what you do, but what you are. You become that which supports life, supports all endeavors. It encourages those who need encouragement, and it becomes the energy of life itself. So it becomes almost like the manifestation of the Divine Mother as well as the Divine Father. So it's the merging of the two, you see? That which is nurturing at the same time that which is demanding of excellence. So the pathway of non-duality then is the devotion to spiritual principles. And as you become devoted to spiritual principles, you're brought up face to face with the mind's propensity for either or, good or evil, liberal or conservative. You know, you're confronted constantly with the so-called polarities. And to reach a very advanced state of consciousness, it is then necessary to transcend the so-called polarities of either-or-ness. Now, the Course in Miracles is quite interesting because it's based on the power of forgiveness. People say, well, how can I forgive somebody who's so bad? I remember one of the first lessons said, my thoughts don't mean anything. And the minute I read that, I said, man, this is genius. This is spiritual genius. I mean, you've got to be very, very advanced to see the truth of that. And so I just went right off. I said, wow, this is great. My thoughts don't mean anything, because in an advanced state, that is a fact. You know, your thoughts don't mean anything. They're occurring spontaneously, and they're not who you are anyway, so they don't really mean anything. And it's obvious that any meaning that they have is any meaning you gave them, because in and of themselves, they're just constructions, self-serving constructions, and don't serve any great purpose. We survive in spite of the mind, not because of it. Everybody thinks, well, if I stopped thinking, I wouldn't survive. No, if you stopped thinking, you'd survive even better than you're surviving now, because everything is happening spontaneously. Since that time when I was, I don't know what age it was, 35 or something, whenever that profound shift of consciousness occurred, everything has been happening spontaneously of its own. The mind is automatically under the control of the spirit, and if you need to remember to take your umbrella, the mind remembers that, and it's because one's survival requires that. One's survival is coming from the spirit.